welcome to episode number 15 of the Film Yarns podcast, presented to you by Jack Finucane and Charles Taylor. Do we want our full names on here? I don't know.
we need pseudonyms or something.
Yeah. This week we saw World on a Wire. It's a 1973 science fiction television serial, so in two parts, from German TV. The title is actually pronounced Welt am Draht, or something like that. Starring Klaus Lowitsch and directed by Rainer Werner Fassbinder. Shot in 16mm. It looks like shit. It was made for German television and originally aired in 73 as a two-part miniseries and is based on the 1964 novel Simulacron 3 by Daniel F. Galois, which we both have read and quite like. Would definitely recommend reading the book over the film. Although, you know, not that the film was bad or anything. No, I just thought it was very washed out. It still had a nice, like, 16mm tapey look, but it was kind of washed out. I don't know. I guess it adds to the sci-fi a little bit.
Yeah, I really appreciated the datedness of the film, especially coming into, like...
It grew on me for sure.
I mean, I've never seen a science fiction film directed by Fassbinder. Like, I've seen Veronica Voss and Fox and His Friends and all that sort of stuff. But
I wasn't familiar with any of his work. Had you seen other films of his? Oh, I didn't realize that he has a massive, like, filmography.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. He's a big name.
Are there any other sci-fis?
Ooh, I'm not quite sure. Potentially, but I'm not sure.
No, I think I need to get into him. I'll just run through the plot quickly just to refresh. I mean, just in case anyone listening hasn't watched or read. I don't know. Sometimes it's nice to just go straight to the podcast. Just have nothing to do with the text. But in the present day, cybernetics and future sciences, it's in German. And it's written... Okay. Cybernetics and Future Sciences Institute... for Cybernetic and Zukunftsforschung, new supercomputer hosts a simulation program that includes an artificial world with over 9,000 identity units who live as human beings, unaware that their world is just a simulation. Professor Vollmer, who is technical director of the program, is apparently on the verge of an incredible secret discovery. He becomes increasingly agitated and antisocial before dying in a mysterious accident. His successor, Dr. Fred Stiller, has a discussion with Günther Laus, the security advisor of the Institute, when the latter suddenly disappears without a trace before passing on Vollmer's secret to Stiller. More mysterious still is the fact that none of the other IKZ employees seem to have any memory of Laus. Meanwhile, one of the identity units is in the simulation attempts suicide. This unit is deleted by Stiller's colleague, Wolfgang, to keep the simulation stable. To investigate the reasons for the suicide, Stiller contacts the contact unit of the simulated world. The unit, called Einstein, is the only identity unit who knows about the simulation, and this is necessary to run the program. In an attempt to become a real person, Einstein switches his mind into Wolfgang's body while Stiller is in contact with the simulated world. Einstein gives Stiller an explanation for the mysteries, vanishing memories, and vanishing persons. He tells them that the real world is nothing else but a simulation of a real world that is one level above. This knowledge causes Stiller to slip into insanity. The other real people interrogate Stiller. Oh, sorry. The other real people in inverted commas, people interrogate Stiller and he is threatened with death, incarceration and involuntary commitment. Stiller is finally able to convince Hahn, the IKZ psychologist, of his theory. The latter soon dies in an accident that is pinned on Stiller, marking him as the suspected murderer of both Hahn and Vollmer. Stiller flees and searches for the necessary contact unit who can connect the real world with the real world a level above. He survives several assassination attempts and discovers the contact is Eva, projected into the simulation as Vollmer's daughter after his death, with whom he believed he had once had a romance. Eva tells him he was modeled on the real Fred Stiller, a person whom Eva loved but became mad with power from directing the simulation in the world above. While Stiller is programmed to die in an ambush, Eva switches the minds of the two Stillers and brings the simulated Stiller into the real world. Nice.
That was very comprehensive.
Spoiler alert. But just because I read this and Permutation City in really close succession, and
yeah, so did I.
It was a bit of a trip just having both of those playing on my mind. You know how we had sci-fi overdose for a few weeks of lockdown, I guess.
Yeah, that's true.
I think Blade Runner and Electric Sheep.
Permutation City and this were
they're closely related, aren't they? Yeah,
good sort of.
I think you gave me both books at the same time or something as well.
I think that was when I was moving my room around as well, so I got to see some of the books that I hadn't seen in ages. I was like, oh, actually, this one was sick. Permutation City was especially interesting because it sort of had a weird mythology to it.
It grew on me so much.
Lives in Perth as well.
Yeah.
And he's this weirdo who has no pictures of himself on the internet. Is totally anti that.
He has a whole article about wrong pictures of himself on Google Image Search.
Yeah, exactly. And he's written it seemed 15 books or something.
Heaps of research papers. He's into theoretical maths and physics and has all these kind of semi sort of Terence McKenna style mathematical theories. He's the type of guy that just takes it really far. He's happy to explore things with his maths.
Yeah, he sort of reminds me of another sort of comparative science fiction writer would be Kim Stanley Robinson, maybe, or someone who appreciates a hard sort of mathematical or economic or ecological truth, and then just puts it in their science fiction and rolls with it, saying what will happen into this in so many years. So I really like that.
Yeah,
it certainly took me a while to get into it though. I was like, fuck, this is too hard.
Everyone says that about his writing as well, because it's so hard sci-fi. It's they'll bring up, you've got to pause and think sometimes when you'll be like, oh, the simulation in the simulation, and then this happened, and you're like, what?
Yeah. It's really meticulously detailed though. I will give it to him. Quite amazing.
Yeah, if you put the work in, maybe with a notepad at your side, then you definitely reap the rewards.
And it also has I often think this, and I don't really know how I actually feel about it, but it comes quite easy to my mind. It's there's a certain almost nihilism to hard mathematics, it seems. It's just world code, essentially.
Yeah.
And oftentimes when people talk about it like that, they seem like they're quite liberated by it. It's the only language that crosses everything. It's a unitary language, really.
And you kind of just uncover it in a lot of ways. That's the crazy thing about pure mathematics, how it reveals, it's not like a language where you make up, you assign words to meanings. It you uncover things with it and you're like, oh, this links to this and I can take this route and then imaginary numbers and this actually has a use and what the fuck?
Yeah, exactly. So, it's a lot, but I think it's worthwhile. But anyway, back to the world on a wire.
Yeah.
Tell me what you thought. It was a bit of a slog being
it could have been shorter. I think
three
it was
and a
good.
Half hours
I
something?
Enjoyed it. Yeah, it's 3.5, I think. And just the pace was a bit come on. Especially if you've read the book, I guess, because you know what's gonna happen and it stays pretty close to the book as well. So I mean it was nice, but it was just a little bit drawn out, but I still good. I don't know. Did we have this on the list? Because I didn't even know that there was a film of Simulacron 3, and from the time period that we've been focusing on as well. It's a good one.
No, so the way I came across this is I was thinking about the book for some random reason, and I was thinking about the 13th floor or 14th floor or whatever, because I have seen that before, and I was also for the PhD proposal, I was looking at a Fassbender film, and then it was there was some linkage somewhere, and it was oh, this is based on this. I was like, oh shit, I gotta get around it.
Yeah,
gotta try it out. It's pure fancy, and it wasn't on the list, I don't think, but it's impressive. I mean, I think I think I would have preferred it if I were to have watched it in the time and, like, say there was a week apart or something. I think I would have appreciated, like, a week between watching the first part and the second part, whereas I watched them pretty much straight to the second one.
Like, yeah, yeah. I get that. It's, like, kind of made for TV, yeah. I guess, with the pace.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But the pacing of the two parts couldn't be any more different. Like, the second part is, like, non-stop, whereas the first part's quite, like... exploratory, like they're kind of like telling you, like, over here we sort of have this machine, and over here we have like this corporate sort of corporation in bed with various forms of government, and like this sort of seems to constantly be sending scientists mad.
Yeah.
Like,
I guess like he spends most of the second one losing his mind, so it does have that pace to it a bit more. Like he just starts doing weirder and weirder things.
That second part reminded me so much of Solaris, right? The style of filming, the places that were filmed. You know, he goes to his like log cabin and stuff. Like,
yeah, definitely, yeah.
even the soundtrack, like I thought, was very very Solaris.
Yeah, I can see that. I fuck with that.
Hmm. I think it was.
Sorry, go on.
I think with 13th Floor, I think in the film you can tell when someone's like going in and out of the simulation because they have something in their eyes that changes, but in this one it's just a sound, but you can't really tell if the sound is changing them or they're changing back or like what's happening.
Yeah, what was that sound? I just want to there was a lot of cue sounds in a film. I'm just having a listen now. For you? It was like a feedback type of sound, wasn't it?
Hmm. But I pitched up.
Oh, yeah, and like I did. It's kind of got that lo-fi, like 70s synth. It's like when it's a non-American film in the 70s, a lot like they use really obscure synths in these sci-fis, and it's cool, but. It's just like, this is what we got, so we're going with it. Like, this is the weirdest sound we could make, and it's just like some really like dry like delay oscillation, or it's like just some sort of like rrr, 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 rrr.
it's definitely sounded like German, like European sort of dark.
Yeah, I'd love to know.
I can see that music playing at clubs as well.
I wish there was more like documentation on sound design from all of the films we've seen for the pod. I haven't looked that much, but it's often hard to find anything about, you know, like the composer or what sort of equipment they use. Like, I'd love that. Just like, oh, we use this for this.
Yeah, that'd be sick. I was thinking about this a little bit, and I was wondering about it because at the start of the 13th Floor, and I can't remember if this is in Simulacron 3, but there's a reference to Descartes, like, I think, therefore I am.
Yeah.
But I thought this was a lot better. In World on a Wire, at the start, the scientist brings the mirror and he's like, you're nothing more than the images others have made of you. I thought that was a much better way of talking about it because, like, the whole I think, therefore I am, you know, like, you can kind of see where that's going. Like, oh, is that the truth? Am I thinking my own thoughts? Am I whatever? But, like, the concept of... you being constituted of what other people have said you are, and then when you look in the mirror, that's like you looking at yourself being like, yeah, like reassuring yourself. I think that's a lot better way of going about it.
I also thought it was just like a good rip. It's just like, you can't think for yourself, you piece of shit. Like, look at, like,
yeah.
It really takes it to him in that scene. It just makes so much fun of it. It's just like,
everyone's just like scientists, they're nuts, they're all mad. Yeah.
That I can imagine this kind of scenes. Work
with you. It was awesome, right? Like,
I'm trying to find it now.
I couldn't get over that. Like, I thought that was just, and they do it so much. There's so many mirror shots in this series.
It was insane. It was. Like, it's like it kind of got a bit stupid. It's just like world inside a world, like. Inception, and like there was so many repeat, where it's a mirror in a mirror, so they get the infinite. I forget that there's an actual name for that technique or whatever, but
I love that. I love seeing the like stratified image of somebody that's just like going forever. I think I thought it was really good.
There were other examples. There was a cool one where they're in the restaurant and the mirror shows like the two random dog statues on the floor.
Mm.
Did you see that? So it wasn't like an infinite mirror sequence. It was like it was just showing a different part of the room, and it's just like, oh, that's weird. They've got these two dog statues like in the middle of the restaurant floor.
I think, yeah, I mean, there was, I think one of the really good ones. And I think, what was the woman's name?
Eva or,
Eva.
One? Okay.
Eva. And she was talking to Fred, but you could only see, like, you couldn't see her, you could only see her legs or something, and everything was cut off, and you could only see Fred. Like, there was a lot of shots where it was, like, it was very much like everyone's sort of making up the world around them, and they're just kind of hearing these, like, when you cut the voice off from the body that sort of constitutes it, is how weird it is just to hear a voice.
It's like that Truman Show vibe.
Yeah, exactly. Like, voices are quite meaningless, right? When you cut them off, but also like a voice from nowhere is quite scary.
Yeah, yeah.
Like you need it to come from somewhere. Like it has to be like, okay, you're speaking to me. I can understand. Like you know, once you start saying, and I don't know, maybe that was like a attempt at doing like an early glitch. Like, oh, where does the voice come from? What like is there like a dual location? Like the person's over here, but the voice is over here.
Yeah. How there's sort of some like. It was almost like David Lynch elements in a couple of scenes as well. I guess the main one, you know, when he goes into the simulation, I think it's the first time he meets Einstein, and there's that like fat guy with the lipstick on. He changes from one phone booth to the other, and he's just like looking at him like, and he's just like this creep. It's like he didn't really mean anything, but he's just this creepy ass guy like staring him down with the lipstick on.
Yeah, that was weird, yeah. No, I loved everyone in the simulation. I loved the first one in the simulation where he's driving and there's just massive message comes on the screen. Like, everything goes black and white. Do you remember?
What's the message?
Okay, it's in German.
Oh, sorry. Okay. You should know.
But, yeah, there was a few of those, like, and I agree, I think you're right. I think it was very, like, David Lynch style, like, when he's driving with Eva and the street and the lamps go away for a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
It's cool. And then they come back and...
Everything's so subtle with that, but, yeah, they did do those things well. Mm. It's just, yeah.
Yeah, I think that all those little glitches and, like... some of the more overt ones where you have like the cement crane and you can see it sort of following him around. I really love that. And then like, you know, like the woman dies instead of him, but like, you know, he wouldn't know that, only we can say. And the camera actually becomes sort of the eye of the
simulation. Do you mean the woman makers. Where the thing falls on her head?
Yeah.
When he asks for a light?
Yeah. That's when the camera sort of becomes, or like we become, or sort of the eye of the simulation makers at the very top.
Right.
And so you start becoming like, you're watching him, you're watching what he's trying to do. Like, it's not like, it's not just panning or anything anymore. It's following him, it's focusing on him. It's the same as when Eva and Fred are in the log cabin and the camera moves from the doorway when they walk in and so like tries to move into a window and looks through. Sees him on the other side, like it becomes very, what's the word? Like, not stalkerish, but, yeah, I don't know. Do you understand what I mean?
I get what you mean. Yeah, no, I totally
like,
get
like
what
it
mean.
Becomes like a voyeur, right? Like someone who's kind of just taking pleasure from watching, like.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely approached the film a bit too close-mindedly, I think. I think I think maybe because I hadn't heard of it, or like the first few something in the few opening scenes, I was like, ah, don't know if this is going to like live up to the book, because I was a big fan of the book, but then it did get better and better. I guess it was similar to like Brazil. I guess Brazil, like, it's kind of ugly, you know, like everything's so slimy and like dirty, and it's got that ugly sort of 80s weird, like plasticky, like Idiocracy. Mm. It just is just like, oh, I don't know about this film. It's not very hi-fi, but then it's actually good. It's actually very good.
Yeah.
I was just looking at the scene with the dogs in it that I was talking about. I think that's when he first goes in. It's because it's connected to the scene with the fat guy with the lipstick. I'm just trying to figure out have I missed something there? Because the guy, he changes from the left phone booth to the right phone booth. And I'm not sure why. I thought it was confusing Stiller which phone booth he was meant to go to or something.
Yeah, maybe. I'm not quite sure. Maybe it was just a glitch as well in the thing. I'm not quite sure.
Okay.
It was weird though. It could have been there was focus on that character. So it must have meant something, but perhaps it was even like a German thing, like that maybe people understand there. there could be like a cultural joke or something, you know?
For sure.
I did think the Zeno's paradox thing was interesting, right? Because Fred has that picture on a notepad of like the soldier, Achilles or somebody, I don't know, a Roman or Greek soldier, and he has the tortoise, and then when he looks back, it's gone. That was fascinating, right? It's like the movement is an illusion. It's sort of like more and more sort of go into these, I guess, problems of logic or problems of time, right? Because you have like Einstein, right? And it's like time is relative. Whereas you have like someone like, what's his name? Like, is it Henri Bergson? I think he does lots of time stuff where it's like, well, actually time is like infinite. Like your point in time is not like deterministic or anything. Like you have infinite possibilities out of time. Like you can do anything. And that just shows how much time isn't able to be made sense of.
Yeah.
Or isn't able to be relativized, though. But maybe that's just sort of an issue between maybe philosophy and the like more hard and natural sciences, perhaps. But I think that takes me to my next point, which is there does seem to be like a deterministic aspect to this, like, because they want simulacron to be used so that the metal manufacturer can understand what they'll need in 20 years' time or whatever.
Yeah. It had a creepy thing. It was like people's buying habits and stuff like that. That's what we do today.
Yeah, exactly. But like they would change everything to see if it works this way and that way, like, which seems, like, it's impossible, right? Like, it's impossible to just tell what will happen until it's already happened. So the only way they'd be able to program to see what will happen in the future is only by retroactively doing it. And I don't think you'd ever be able to get it perfect. But I don't know.
Well, the theory is that if they simulate with enough complexity and then just play it out faster, they can accurately simulate, you know, like if you could duplicate everything in our world in a simulation, I guess in theory and run it faster, in theory, we might end up with similar outcomes.
Yeah, but like, one of the sort of issues at hand, right, is that like they're not just circuits sort of like doing things. They're not just like bodies of electricity or whatever. They are like, for all intents and purposes, human, right?
The simulated beings in the movie.
The simulator, So then, like, wouldn't there be no way to, like, fully determine it? Like, you could do as many complex things as possible, but, like, at the end of the day, they're just going to do weird person stuff, like move from one telephone box to the other. I don't know. Like,
well, I guess that depends if you... Yeah, no, that's a good point about the telephone box, but I guess that depends if you believe in determinism in our supposedly unsimulated world, you know?
Yeah, that's true. I was also wondering, And this sort of has something to do maybe more with the second part than the first part, is like anxiety around like what makes you you. Like, there has to be a me. There has to be something that like establishes me as a person.
Like my free will to choose.
Yeah.
Like my free chosen actions make me me.
Yeah. Like, maybe the fact that there isn't is the most like liberatory thing. Like, there isn't a real you. Like, you're the person you are in front of people more than you are when you're not in front of anybody, you know? Like the ultimate sort of freeing concept is that, like, at the core of you is nothing. And that's why everything can sort of like make its move around that. Because like, you're not really held to anything.
Yeah, that's cool. Because there's no you know, well, depend if you don't believe in like a almighty God, then yeah, there's no official record of who and what you are other than the story you make up and the story that people in your life make up about you. But even theirs isn't that concrete, you know, you are to them whatever you are on any given day for most people.
Yeah. Exactly.
And then it's your personal story in your head that's like, but then that's always changing.
Yeah, like, and it, you know, the narrative in your head is probably more fiction than fact at the end of the day as well, because a lot of the things that you see as continuities probably weren't.
It's like, very vague. Depending on your mood and how you're feeling about yourself, it's sort of just like pieced together on any given day.
Yeah, like, and I think that's still like, I think that would apply to lots of things. Like, I think you would like see causality in the same way that like there's probably always cause for everything that happens. But at the same time, like, you could put the root of that cause somewhere where it isn't, but you observed it at a certain point or whatever. It's the same for like, you know, like art, people who are like, well, you know, like, we're biological beings. And so, you know, we do these things through biology, but like, you know, that wouldn't be the case all the time. Like, the ways to prove that that's not the case, and it shouldn't be both things, but like half of both, you know what I mean? Like, I did this thing because, you know, I'm peacocking or whatever. It's like, well, it's just the animal in me. But at the same time, you know, it could be like, well, no, maybe, you know, like, you have a desire to be noticed. Like, it isn't like a sexual function. You want someone to pay attention to you, or like, you know, so like, and those could be both true at the same time. And so the thing that you are that isn't a thing allows both of those things to happen.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I'll try. No. I'll try and continue that, but I might lose what I'm talking about, but because I've read about it plenty of times, and it's always interested me, like quantum physics. Because you don't do it much in engineering and uni. You do a little bit. I mean, obviously, I did physics in high school, and then we had a couple of physics units in uni, but they kind of avoid it. There's maybe a few lectures on it. They're like, yeah, this is quantum physics. Don't worry about that because you don't need it for anything, which is, you know, it is true. But it was kind of exactly like, it reminded me of primary school, when you have like, you learn about history and you learn about religion, or like, you learn about dinosaurs, and there's that rift in my mind. It's just like, when, like, why are dinosaurs mentioned in the Bible? Like, what's going on there? Which one was first? Like, and then you kind of figure out why that is later, like when you're a little bit older. And it was similar with, I guess, like, you know, because when you learn about physics in some sort of higher education, you feel like they're handing over all these secrets of the universe to you, but then they have to skim over all these parts where they're like, yeah, we'll just give you the like slimmed down version of this, because it actually gets really complex. And then it puts like a vague kind of blur in your brain. It's just like, well, there's a big gap there that needs to be filled, because all the other pieces fit together perfectly. And like, well, where I'm going with this is like, you know, when we had Newtonian physics and everything sort of made a lot of sense, like, we figured out that how gravity works, and, you know, masses attract each other, and it varies with the, you know, the inverse square law means that things attract less as they get further away. And so, you know, we orbit the sun and the sun orbits the galaxy and that's all good. Like, but then like the quantum physics kind of came onto the scene and we're like, oh, wait a minute. Like, so we basically thought we had everything figured out. We had nature conquered on paper. We're like, well, now we just got to like figure a few more things out and we'll have infinite energy, spacefaring. And then it's like quantum physics came on the scene and it was just like, wait a minute. There's all these other rules that contradict our normal rules around space and time. And that, like, it definitely alludes to simulation or something, because it's like it gives a little, it creates a doorway where there's some unknown force at play that can decide how things go. And it's just like, you know, because it, like, for example, like paired electrons and things like that, where they can interact with each other across, you know, they can be hundreds of kilometers away and still, and one can, like, cause the other one to disappear at the exact same time, and the dual slit experiment. Yeah, all that stuff. It just like broke our understanding of space and time. And then, so then you're kind of back to the drawing board, and you're like, well, maybe there is someone orchestrating, you know, day to day things and decisions that you make. Because it's like, okay, you have, you know, you have chemicals in your brain that transfer, you know, your brain transfers chemicals, and that's part of your decision making. You know, how you feel determines decisions you make. So we're like, oh, it's just biology. But then there's quantum effects in those reactions. And then it's like, oh, so maybe, so once you go deep, deep down, part of your decision making is affected by this unknown deciding force that decides on what particles are, where and when and why.
Yeah, and from like a subjective view as well, like I don't think that like there's one, like I don't think that you experience immediacy in the world. I think there's like layers of mediation. Like, I don't think you ever just like something happens to you and you're like, yeah, this is exactly what I want to do. This is exactly how I react. You know, lots of stuff happens between those things. So like, yeah, I think it's impossible to ever say like, right, there's an Occam's razor of human reason or whatever. Like, things just don't happen, and then you react to them, and that's that. Like, there's so many things going on at the same time.
It's just so much more blurry in reality.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, like, that's sort of the parallax view of the symbolic order, right? Like, you make meaning to these things that are sort of given to you. And they break occasionally and you have to deal with this, or like the imaginary sort of covers over it as well. So yeah, I think there's always these little pockets of issues where it's just like, oh fuck, like, and like with quantum physics there, you have like a Copernican revolution, right? Where you're like, oh, you know, the Earth is the center of the everything and everything moves around it. And then Copernicus is like, oh, actually, I think the sun is the center and no, there's a galaxy.
I'm sorry, church.
Yeah. And then, like, you know, he gets fucked up for it, but the world changes completely after that.
Everything well, I think it took like, a while, sadly, but yeah, it did. It was due to that. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And so very occasionally like, you have these Copernican revolution. Yeah. And it's probably still happens, you know, like it's just not the church fathers say anymore. It's like a particular school of whatever. But you need that. You need the blasphemous moments.
At least, that's what's necessary. Yeah. No, but at least it is a lot more socially acceptable these days to be like, oh, I believe that the world's a simulation. Like it... you know, apart, well, maybe people in the church would kind of agree with that in a way.
I guess
like, because you are saying, you know, you're saying there's a higher order when you say that the world is a simulation.
This is a chest run.
Yeah.
I would question the whole world is a simulation thing, just because like, what does that do about ethics and like politics and stuff? Because like, if the world's a simulation, then you don't really have to, you don't have any like social or communal duty to help other people, you know, right?
I don't think it's not the most useful proposition. I think its main use is helping people out of like narcissism, like or nihilism, sorry. Like, it's just like helping people who feel like, maybe helping people who are so anxious that they don't want to make any decision about anything. And if you can at least stress the lack of seriousness of life, I guess, through that. Like, oh, it's just a simulation, it's just a game kind of thing. Like, just so people can not take their own life so seriously and gamify it a bit more in order to do what they want to do. Like, as you know, because a lot of people who maybe struggle to take action in their real life are perfectly fine controlling a character in a game. But if you can translate that back, just, you know, say, just place as much importance on a real life as you do the character in the game, like where you're not afraid to die and you go around, you know, like accomplishing things in the game.
Yeah, that's true. I guess, yeah, there's a lot in between those two things, but I can see some...
don't like play your life as if you're in a game of Call of Duty, but...
Some people seem to do that.
More like The Sims, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. I guess if it is like in the service of helping people out of some sort of like hole or whatever, then yeah, I can see the potential in that.
Yeah, well, then you can be but, you can be Elon Musk.
Yeah, the worst dude ever. Yeah. You don't want to be here. I'm so happy to see him like getting fucked up over his whole we coo whoever we want to thing.
We what?
So you know, in Bolivia, you know how like a lot of companies that use lithium get it from Bolivia. And they saw that there was a coup. Because the Bolivian government were like, well, we want you to pay us for this. Like, we need something, or we don't want you to mine it, or whatever. And essentially, the American, who knows who else was in it, but like American forces staged a coup to get the democratically elected prime minister, the president, out of Bolivia, and so they could continue to mine lithium.
Right.
And Elon Musk made the tweet, which was like, we coup whoever we want to.
There was no sarcasm? Like, it just seems slightly out of character.
I mean, even if it was sarcastic, well, I think Elon Musk is a real like edgelord now.
For sure.
But his company has taken such a big hit now that the democratically elected for the second time, so it can't be like a mistake. Socialist Party has come back in power and said no, like you can't be doing this, and Tesla has gone down so much. Of it, and I'm sure lots of things that require lithium.
Yeah, wow. Well, yeah, I guess, I'm seeing some headlines now. Yeah,
yeah, because it's the same as like you know, Apple and other phone companies and PlayStation that like mine coltan in the Congo, and how they like indirectly or perhaps directly support militias and child slavery.
Coltan or cobalt, or both.
Coltan. It's a longer word.
Okay.
But coltan. It's like coal something, tan okay. something. Like.
Yeah, it's fine.
But anyway, yeah. So I'm happy to see some of those people getting their just desserts.
Yeah. No, I remember reading about like as part of that as well. Like, because I remember when I was working at the mining place. And I was like researching, like health and safety and respirators and fumes and dust and stuff like that. And reading about like mining conditions in worse countries, like how bad it is, because especially, I think it's lithium, where it's like really flaky. And so like a lot of this really fine dust goes in the air, and like, I was reading about conditions of, like third world countries where the kids are put into those mines and they don't have a mask or anything. And it's just like, they're in there like 8 to 12 hours a day, just breathing in like all that dust. And I was like, it's fucking terrible. Like I was there like worrying. I was like, oh, this is not good for me. Then I'm trying to make myself feel better about it. And I was just like, wow, that's properly bad.
It's fucked up, right? Like, it's terrible, the exploitation that goes into those things, and no one ever really knows about it. And once you find out about it, you kind of have a choice as to how you sort of live your life after that, really. That's a very disruptive moment.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of like, you know, the first, you would have heard, like, people accused Apple of it ages ago, like, about, you know, acting like they're all virtuous and then showing their, like, factories and their mining practices for their raw materials in Africa and stuff like that. And I always get that kind of, like, it's not really a good trait to have, but when I come, like, if I'm driving and I come across someone driving a Tesla in some way where there is some sort of, like I was parking the car the other day and I parked in a weird spot right in front of this guy in, like, in a Tesla. And he, like, started having a go at me, and I was instantly just be like, fuck this guy. Like, just, like, instant, like, fuck your virtue signaling car, you fucking motherfucker. Like, automatically judge people that drive Teslas. But, like, I feel like it is right a lot of the time. It, you know, obviously they're not all terrible people, but the type of people that buy them, they're just not great people, sorry to say.
Oh, no, I think that's probably true. It's a real shame.
They're people that think they want to look like they're great people.
Yeah, often it seems like a lot of those people are assholes. Yeah, I agree. it reminds me of that South Park episode where everyone gets electric cars and they start, like, sniffing their own farts and just being like, oh, you know, I'm just doing my bit for the environment. Thanks. You don't have to thank me. Like,
it's the whole I wash my hands thing.
Yeah.
I wash my hands
Yeah, exactly. It's like, well, I'm, you know, I'm doing more for the environment. So, like, this is on you now. I bought the good car.
Yeah.
And the crazy thing about that is, like, the real way that you would
Slavoj, you know, it's a classic Slavoj point. I don't know if I'm sure it's been said before Slavoj's time, but it's a classic Slavoj point of, like, the recapitulation of, like, doing good things through capitalism. So, like, you buy the good, you know, you pay the extra money at Starbucks to do the good thing or whatever. It's a classic marketing technique, and it's similar to what we were talking about earlier about the whole climate change thing. Or it is an exact example of that, sorry.
Yeah, I think there's an interesting chapter in Capitalist Realism where Mark Fisher's talking about, like, Capital has done this really interesting trick where now when it comes to problems like poverty and illness and, you know, war in foreign countries or whatever, or at home, the way to fix it is to buy the right thing. Like, you always have to buy the right thing. Like, you Live Aid concert, like, you can go to a show to see, like, Bono and U2 and pay $80, and that $80 is going to go over to a family or a city that needs that money, but capital continues to exploit those people. So really, you're not doing any, like, you're fully working into the capitalist system by being like, I can buy something to get, like, to fix this. But really what you're doing is just continuing the capital.
Yeah. No, that's good. Like, slightly related as well. It's like, you know, did you read Slavoj's short book Pandemic, that he basically released it right at the start of COVID, like around end of March?
I read a little bit, yeah.
There was like a BuzzFeed review. Because, like, a large part of his argument in that book was like, this will put capitalism at least on pause for a little bit so we can all chill out and see what that's like. And it's like, that didn't happen at all. Like, it went into overdrive, people buying stocks and, like, people buying cryptocurrencies and buying streaming equipment. Like, it went crazy. Like, so many, like, retailers have had such a good year, like electronics retailers and, like, musical equipment retailers. Like, obviously small business, like, it's more food businesses and stuff like that. Like, but big money capitalism, big tech companies, they've done so well this year. So it was a good book, but it was almost the opposite of what he was saying might happen. I mean, no one could really predict, but it was a little bit short-sighted in that way.
I think, I do remember him saying that. I remember a couple of people talking about that, and I think, although I think you're right, like, there was that, I think this year has also allowed for the most political engagement as well. Like, there's a lot more protests happening all around the place. People are a lot keener to start like investing in like both local and federal politics.
Yeah.
Injustice that's like directly like happening now after like not so much anymore now that some people are going back to work. Lots of people going things have like worked in different ways. You know, there's been a real social engagement, and I think that is a direct result of capital stopping for a bit. Like, people didn't have to work 7 days a week or 5 days a week, and, you know, only have enough time to, like, fuck around and have a beer after work and then go to bed, so they have to get to work the next day, you know? Like,
true.
So in that sense, I think that there was, like, a little stop. It wasn't a massive one.
Yeah.
And I think you're right. I think lots of people probably made a lot of money off of this. But in that sense, like,
no, that's true. Like, and a lot of people, I guess, not so much for me or maybe you, but yeah, a lot of people who weren't used to having a lot of spare time were kind of like forced to introspect, perhaps, or just do something a little bit different to the day to day. Because it's like, well, I have all this time now. I have to fill that with, like, I don't know. We don't really have trouble having things to do, whereas some people without like their job would be very unused to having all that free time. Be like, oh, shit, I need a hobby or something.
Yeah, I think that's true. That's very true. And I think, it's certainly led to people returning to thinking about what the problem might be with having such like hectic and precarious working rights and situations, you know, because everyone, like, you either lost your job straight away or you were put on indefinite hold or you were forced to work through a pandemic or something, you know, like, why is it that a boss can tell you what to do? Like, aren't we just both people?
Yeah.
Right? You don't own me, but, like, when you say, like, if you don't, I'll fire you and you have to pay rent and food and, like, your phone bill and internet or whatever the fuck, like, that's a forced decision, you know? Yeah. Like, when someone says, you know, like, you have the decision, no, you don't. Anyone that says you have the decision is a fucking liar.
Yeah.
And it's I'm lucky to be in a country and a state that had a relatively good welfare plan to look after people.
Yeah.
It wasn't the case across the world for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. I felt a little bit guilty coming here and speaking to like a friend of mine who had a really rough time. No welfare. And yeah, he was out of work for a bit and like, you know, fucking living off beans for a few weeks, you know, it's like,
yeah,
that's doing it so much more rough than I was.
Yeah, exactly. Like, and it's pretty crazy when you hear people try and say, like, we should cut even more of the welfare state. Like, you know, like if people really wanted to live or whatever, they would get a job. And it's like, oh yeah, of course, like, get a job. That's what, like, that's what we need. Like, when, like, there was a study the other day that showed that there was like something like 50 or 60 job seekers for each singular job that was out there.
It's fucking nuts. Just before we got on the phone, I was reading about like a Reddit post from people that had worked for Serco, which is like the company that does the hiring for Centrelink. I think they have a couple, depending on the government department, but they were basically considered themselves wage slaves. So like they got paid like just over minimum wage and like they were monitored like every second. You know, you'd get like messages asking like, why are you spending so much time on that call? And it was casual contract, but full-time work, like no benefits, you know, they'd have a go at you if you took sick days. It just sounded like the worst job ever. And like, there was a couple of posts like reiterating being like, yeah, this guy, what he said is exactly true. And then like, I think the Reddit original thread was cause they cut like 400 workers or something recently. And it fucking cringes me out, like knowing how difficult it is to get Centrelink or, you know, welfare in Australia I'm sure it's difficult in other countries, but they purposely make it very difficult to deter people from doing it. But like, and they make in a lot it, of cases, like, it's
a tiny amount of money as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's fine. Anyway,
yeah, we can. No need to beat that dead horse.
We got a bit far afield there. What else?
Millennials what else complain about welfare podcast. Millennial leftists complain about the price of avocado toast podcast.
tell me more. What else do you think about the TV show? The series.
I think I need to read Simulacra and Simulacron.
Yeah.
At some point. I don't know. Well, that was in the C also on the Wikipedia page. Simulacra and Simulation, sorry. By
Yeah, the Baudrillard one, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's good. I think it's sort of like a memeified book as well. It's got some interesting points, but it's something.
What is the genealogy of like simulation literature? Do you like what? Where do we? If we go trace it backwards, before this, what's the next stepping stone? Maybe we can just do films, or like or maybe include books, I guess, because that's where it would begin.
I guess in theory, like with Baudrillard and stuff, you also have like a whole host of sort of Marxist writers, like Althusser and Lefebvre and that. And then on the other side, I guess where like Baudrillard sort of comes up with this simulacron simulation difference is like Lacanian psychoanalysis with the whole like imaginary symbolic real.
Right. And okay, and Freud and does
not
Freud,
so much Freud.
Yeah, but if you're Freud, talking about like dreams and reality, and you know the connection of a dream world to the real world, like
I think so. But like, I think with Baudrillard, it's a bit more like the symbolic and the real. He sort of changes the terminology of the real, but like with Lacan, it's like the symbolic is what we live in. It's what like tells us what things are. And, you know, we also are symbols. We're like signifiers to other signifiers. And the real is like the actual world.
Yeah.
Like, that's underneath the symbolic. But we never get to see it. It's always covered up. But when we do see it, it's always something that fucks everything up. Like it's like the glitch in the Matrix where he sees the cat go, deja vu. And it just has to get covered up, you know, it's something traumatic, it's something that might make you say like fuck or shit or ah, like something that you can't say, like you don't know what it is, or you cry or you laugh, you know, you can't really tell these things. But then when you go to like Baudrillard, it's like something that is so abstract from the thing that it represents. So it's a bit more like media studies and sociology, whereas kind of psychoanalysis is a bit more like linguistics and stuff like that. But I guess like Plato or someone who's an idealist.
You've nailed it, because I'm on the Wikipedia page, simulated reality in fiction, and the first entry in the literature list is Plato's Republic.
Allegory of the cave.
So
that's an interesting one.
That's the OG simulation story, apparently.
Yeah, it's a good one as well. I think it's very interesting. And I think at the end of the day, like, it sort of proves that people are a lot happier with the simulation than the real or whatever.
It's funny because there's no other entries. So that's 380 BC, and then there's nothing until 1635, Life is a Dream by Pedro Calderon de la Barca.
That sounds interesting. I love a Spanish author as well. I think that they do some wild stuff.
So, yeah, it's a play. Central themes of the conflict between free will and fate, as well as restoring one's honor.
I think even like Don Juan and stuff like that. No, not Don Juan. Don Quixote. Don Juan. Don Quixote has a little bit of that in the what is life? Like, do I give a meaning or does it give me meaning?
Yeah.
Who is God? Like, so you kind of have some of that as well. I think, yeah, there's a lot of interesting stuff out there. I don't It's interesting that you have like a list of things.
It's
like
a good
that.
List, yeah. Like, so, like, it's got Ray Bradbury, and then it's basically Philip K. Dick dominating the list.
Is the Ray Bradbury one the Fahrenheit 451 or whatever
no,
it is?
No, the Velt.
Yeah, I don't know.
Short story from the Illustrated Man, and then it's like a lot of Philip K. Dick, Stanislaw Lem, not Solaris, but I think he wrote Solaris.
Yeah, Roadside Picnic, I think. No, he wrote Stalker. They wrote, yeah. No Solaris. It was
and
the
Stalker,
brothers who did Stalker.
Okay, right.
I think, yeah.
And that was... Oh, I changed the order. Hold up. Yeah, this is a good list because I want to look into a lot of the stuff on here that I know nothing about. But it's Simulacron 3 makes the cut onto this list.
Nice.
That was 1964. So after like Philip K. Dick had about six entries. Not that this, you know, it's not some world agreed upon list, but Wikipedia is fairly reliable. Philip K. Dick. Kurt Vonnegut Jr. Breakfast of Champions.
I didn't know. Oh, that's interesting.
I think that's just Kurt Vonnegut. I didn't know he was a junior. Yeah. It's 1973. And then it's in full swing from there, basically. William Gibson, Neuromancer.
Oh, then it comes to like cyberspace and
Snow
stuff.
Crash.
Okay,
yeah. Oh, Greg Egan, Crystal Knights.
Nice.
92.
We'll have to get into that then.
Yeah. And then Permutation City, 94. It's not a huge list, is what I mean, I guess, like the point I'm making. You know, if your name was on here, you'd be like, fuck yeah. That's all I'm saying. Like, there's not that many names on there, like, of this kind of, you know, considered to be the doctrine of texts about simulated reality.
Well, it's interesting. I guess, like, the other, maybe another criteria that you would have to meet to be in that list is a new take on simulated reality.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, it'll be a novel expression, I guess,
yeah,
of, like, simulation.
Yeah.
But getting back to World on a Wire, what do you think about part two? That one really like notched it up, I think, in terms of like the paranoia and the.
Yeah, I liked part two more than part one just because the pace was faster, I guess. The dialogue was a little bit more intense, so they have some better conversations. I like what's the bald guy's name? He was pretty good with the moustache.
It was Mark something.
The guy who was taking over.
Mark Holm.
Yeah,
or Holm.
Yeah. He was pretty good because he was so creepy and just like.
Yeah, he was with the moustache. And yeah, he was like, oh yeah, I just want to kill all these people pretty much. Yeah, it was terrifying.
And then those guys come to put him in the straitjacket and he like, they're just all chill. He's like, looks, you know how they look over the balcony and they're like, hey, whatever. And he's, yeah. It's just, bits like that were a bit weird. He's like, he's really nervous looking over the balcony. But then I guess because he's losing it a bit, you know how he puts his shirt on really slowly?
Yeah.
What's the deal there?
And she's like, hurry up, come on. He's just like, nah, I'm just chilling. I guess.
And then he's
like,
running.
Yeah, I guess he just keeps oscillating between total seriousness of like his predicament and like just the absolute absurdity of being part of a simulation. Like, it's like, oh, you know, will I go to asylum, or is there even asylum coded into this? Maybe, I don't know. You know, like.
Yeah, it certainly would be worrying if, like, in your real, you know, day-to-day world, things like that started happening. Because, you know, it would be so strange to experience that you would be questioning your sanity, like, before. Mm. It would be hard to believe. Like, you know, say it was real, whatever that means. The first instinct would be, like, that's not real. I'm insane, I think.
Yeah.
Not believing what you'd seen.
Yeah. I think... Or you would just forget about it. Maybe you'd be like, no, that's strange. I don't think I've ever experienced deja vu, but I know some people who have experienced it a lot. And
you never experienced
it? They seem to be. I may have, but nothing that strikes me as like a really strong memory of deja vu.
You'd know. I think you'd know, because it's like, it's one of those things where if you don't know the term for it, you would still remember having experienced it.
Mm.
I've experienced it quite a lot, but it might just be like a flaw in the way the brain works, where it's like, I'm not, you know, I don't know, I haven't read that much about it, but it's kind of like, it's the brain saying like, oh, I've experienced exactly this, but it could just be conflating two experiences, like two similar experiences, and it creates the feeling of like redoing something you've done, like just a little, you know, it could just be that boring and that simple.
Yeah, well, I often wonder why I haven't experienced it, because I lead a pretty routine life. You know, like, it's essentially probably the same thing for breakfast, you know, do the same thing in the morning.
I don't know, it's not really related to that. It's just something that kind of flicks on like a switch. Like, when I've had like a really routine life, I'd never experienced it doing a routine thing. It's not so much like that.
Yeah, I don't know. But I think that that's a good example of like a sort of a glitch in the but I don't think it's a glitch. See, this is what I think is interesting. I don't think it's a glitch in the world, like in Simulacron 3, where like, oh, this is a simulation. I think it's a glitch in your mind and the way that your mind processes this, like your symbolic reality.
Right.
And so like it's not a thing to you. It's you to the thing. It's like this like world of constructed meaning that you've been forced into being part of through language. And so sometimes sometimes that like symbolic chain is just like, oh, something's wrong, or like, you know, like.
That's a good point. I like that.
Yeah, yeah. I think because there is limits to it. There's always limits to it. There's limits to like what you can think and what you can say. You can and the weird thing is that like you can think about a limit, and so you've obviously like thought past that limit by thinking about the limit, or else you wouldn't be able to. Yeah. Anyway,
I was just on that same Wikipedia page, the list of, because I was looking at books, but as far as films go, World on a Wire is the third one on the list. So, but also this is a great list for like, I don't know, I didn't come across any, a lot of these I didn't come across when we were kind of planning films we could do for the pod, but like it's got Brazil on it. But there's a bunch on it that we haven't done, or like They Live. We haven't done They Live, and that would be fire. Live. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just, I'd happily rewatch it because it's such a classic.
Oh, it's great. Absolutely great. I'm keen. Like, you got to send that list to me or whatever.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be mad at like seeing that list of books as well.
And 13th Floor is on it as well. Yeah. I'll just send you a link to the page, but, it's a great list, man. It's kind of like it's a good track to go down. The first film is The Illustrated Man, 1969, which was the Ray Bradbury book.
Ah, okay. That's cool.
It's directed by Jack Smite. I don't know much about him.
I have no idea who that is.
He's got about 20 films.
Is Run Lola Run in it?
I think I saw that come up just before, but I don't think it's on this particular list.
So that's a good one. That's just like every day she wakes up and does the same thing, but like the decision leads to like a totally different thing happening.
Okay.
And then like wake up and be like, oh, I gotta do it again. It's quite interesting.
Source Code is on it.
That's sick.
Obviously Westworld, yeah. So Westworld came out the same year as this. I would say this is better than Westworld.
Ooh. I mean, they did something great with Westworld with that series, so, you know. Right?
But the film.
Yeah, the film sucked, but at least it was made so they could make the series.
Did they have to make it to make the series? I haven't seen the series. Is it good? Is it on Netflix?
Yeah, it must be your Stan or one of those things. Like, everyone requires like six different fucking subscriptions to everything now.
It's produced by HBO.
Can you get HBO in Britain?
Oh, I have my ways.
Sometimes you can't get around it. If they need like card payment, it's just like, you're not in the place we need you to be.
No, the proxy bay doesn't require card payment.
Ah, oh, good. Good. What else?
Not much else.
I said I would go help my Tom in like 15 or 20 minutes. So I'll have to get off around then. But
no, that's all good. I think we're almost there, really.
Well,
closing thoughts?
I think just before we do that, I think the second part really did, like, what I really liked was just like the overemphasis of like the simulatoriness, I don't know, of the thing, like, you know, people, any random people just started following him or pointing to him or whatever, you know, like the simulation, like Eva turned into a wolf, you know, like there's all these things that just sort of happened.
They're so, like, yeah, it's really him, the murderer, and all the people like slowly chasing him and they start running faster.
Yeah, I love it. Yeah, just all the like five different police with machine guns just shooting him on the roof of a car. Just fucking hectic. Final thoughts. I thought this was awesome. You know, I think it was long. It was certainly like a labor of love, but I loved it.
Yeah, I mean, but it's not like I feel bad for saying that it's too long. Like, you know, who's in a hurry? Like,
I have one sort of caveat, though, I guess, in terms of, and this goes for the 13th floor as well. They didn't do much with like the political side of Simulacron 3. Like, I love the fact that in Simulacron 3 they were like trying to plot politics in simulation, and then like in the real world,
in Simulacron 3 it was massively political. What do they call the review bots or something?
Yeah, pollster bots.
They mention them all the time.
Yeah, or you would have to pay money or something to skip it. Like, yeah, that's a real thing now. Like, so I wish they did a little bit more with that. But I'm not shocked that they didn't. I think that might have been a harder route to go through.
Yeah, it's the type of novel that is kind of difficult to translate well to a film. They played it sort of safe, I guess.
It's such a great subject matter. I think the story itself is really good. And I think this film did really good with it.
Like, imagine trying to make Permutation City into a film.
Yeah, it'd be fucked. It just wouldn't be like a good film to watch, I don't think. There'd be too much like going through simulations and stuff like that.
You could do an artistic take like Inception. So Inception's kind of like an action movie with like a little bit of that. And I got like strong Inception vibes from... Well, like World on a Wire would have been pretty... I think like in 73, it would have been a pretty fun watch because seeing like just the whole like going into another world thing on film reasonably well would be such a cool experience. Like, we've grown up with The Matrix and stuff where it's sort of like, you know, they show that whole transition really well. Like, oh, you close your eyes and put on this helmet and you're in another world. And that is almost second nature to us. But back then it would have been like pretty cool to just have that kind of illustrated to the viewer in a way that maybe you couldn't imagine as clearly from reading a book about it or just thinking about it yourself. But then like seeing the logistics of like you put on a helmet and it taps into your senses and then you go inside the computer, like opening up that part of people's minds would be, I don't know, quite a cool experience because you could see the possibility of it, I guess.
Yeah. And I guess the other thing is like, a real anxiety around computers, like, you know, once we have this technology to go on the internet, will that like prove that, you know, maybe our world isn't so humanistic and there is like a more, you know, robot, cybernetic sort of relationship to things we have, and will that undermine our being as people, which it really has, it seems.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I have two final points. I'll make them quick, okay. But I just thought of two more. It's like, well, the first, like, this is a quick quip about, I love how, like, the old movies, like, they often refer to these sorts of things by saying, like, electronic circuits. It's like a really mechanical reference, like, oh, it's just an electronic circuit. They don't refer to, like, digital code. Like, we had digital stuff in 73, but not really. So they're still in the realm of, like, who's the guy that invented the computer?
Not like Babbage or whatever.
No, there's a film about him. It's just like, it's that like really mechanical reference. Like, I'm just circuits, when it's these days, it's more like code.
It's all code.
Yeah, yeah. You know, you don't need to build a whole, like, if you had an analog circuit trying to do a whole simulation, it would be ridiculously massive. Yeah, so you reduce the logic down to like digital rather than using like a code to do it. I thought that was just funny. And the other thing I was going to say was like, because we were talking about films and their relationship to the real world, or like specifically sci-fi, semi-dystopian warnings and things like that. This film in particular, I guess, I mean, it's not really warning of anything, so much as like illustrating an idea. But do you think when it's films like this, where it's like, there's always like a political side and there's or the book more so, there's a political side and there's a company who's doing something dodgy, you know, for their benefit. Do you think it kind of memifies these sorts of things that like they do come true? We have these sorts of, you know, like you like Skynet is a meme now. People are like, oh, Google is Skynet. But it's like, does that detract from our ability to actually voice realistic concerns about things like that? Because it's become memified. So it's like the world's a joke, you know, everything's a meme. Like it's like, these are kind of real and bad things.
Yeah, I think, when people memeify something, I think it's a certain defense mechanism against like the inability to really change anything, right? Yeah. So like if there is, which there are,
like corporations, there's a certain voicing of despair, like or lack of power.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, like I could confront this properly and just be like, this person, like this, like for Google, like it's constantly monitoring my behavior and creating a profile and then selling it to people and all that sort of stuff, and sort of molding me to Google's tastes rather than the other way around. But rather, I would just like to see the pairs of shoes that I might want to buy. Like, you know, I'd prefer to think of it just as like, oh, this is ridiculous. Oh, look at this weird thing that happened. I guess that's sort of like why people do weird stuff to search engines and things. So it sort of breaks the way that they can like construct a psychological profile of you.
Yeah, I've seen to Facebook as well. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Which I think is interesting. I kind of like it, but I think...
I think you can get plugins that do it as well on your web browser.
Which, yeah, I think is cool. Like, I like that. But I think in terms of this film, and, like, if I had to find a warning, it would have to be, like, the problem with the internet. I guess, like, that's my closest approximation to what would be, like, a simulation at this point. Is that like it undermines you as a person because you're like, oh, which one's the real me? Like you're too close to two yous. And that's sort of changing now to the new generation. Newer generations are sort of like, what you do on the internet is exactly who you are on the outside as well. Whereas before there was a problem with that. Like now it's like, you know, if you say you're going to murder someone on the internet or like you send someone abusive messages or something, someone will find that and they'll be like, look at you, you're a dickhead. Like, and you can't just be like, oh, that was me on the internet. Like, you're like, yeah, that's you. Like,
yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, so I think it's a legitimate anxiety. And I think it was true. And I think it still is true, but maybe it's changing a little bit. Like, I think there's this really interesting, essay that was written by this this woman in like California or something. She was just like an internet user in like the mid 90s, and she was talking about how like the problem with the internet is that I sell myself to you, like I'm a consumable for everyone on the internet, and like everyone else is there's not actually a utopian, like we can be who we are and express ourselves. We're just all selling our like personalities to each other, like you're enjoying it and consuming it and then like selling yourself as well, and so you're becoming part of this performance of yourself. You're not actually being liberated or anything. You're trying to be more of like the thing that you want people to get at, what to consume and buy. And
I mean, I guess it's never fully one or the other, is it? Like, and
no,
like,
no.
So to my point, like, yeah, it's, you know, it's kind of both, like even, you know, the Matrix and Terminator, both. Oh, we could also do The Matrix at some point, I guess.
I guess we have to when it comes to simulations.
Yeah, let's go down that road. But anyway, like even the ones that do serve as a really clear warning of some sort, like, you know, this is what happens with AI, or this is what could happen with a, you know, a huge company and AI and things like that. there's the meme side of it, but there is the real, like, it does make you think of, it does make you try to perceive future problems that you couldn't have really thought up yourself without having seen the film.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's the importance of science fiction. I think the thing, well, maybe the problem with a lot of science fiction today is that, like, oh, you know, we're warning you about how bad the future is going to be, and people are like, oh, the future's going to be really bad. But what you should really look at is not think about the future, but think about now. And those problems are actually happening now. They're just, like, using a mode of expression to show you things that, like, represent its terribleness without all of the sort of veneer of regular life.
Yeah, and the other link, I guess, is, like, the fetishization, like, you know, the Handmaid's Tale sort of shows like that, where the nostalgia for the present, or the nostalgia for the present, is that what he calls it? When it's, like, fetishizing dystopia, kind of like, there's a sickness, there's a sick enjoyment of, like, yeah, this is the world, or, like, this is what the world will be. It's like, I'm just going to watch the future and drift towards it. Like, it's kind of like, I get that point really speaks to me, that Slavoj made about that, where, because, like, there's that certain sick enjoyment of, like, oh, we're actually going to that. Like, at least it's not that now, but I am going to that.
It's certainly something.
And like, look at those most popular shows like Black Mirror and Handmaid's Tale and all those, and you know, more modern dystopian films. Not that there's that many these days. I don't know. Maybe it's too dark for, like, big films. But, you know, Netflix is all over it.
I think, you know, the modern dystopia film is like the Marvel film. Like, you just have this, like, infinite battle between heroes and villains just destroying the world, but they're just both so locked in their ideas of, like, good versus evil.
It's kind of sad. I don't know. I can't comment. I haven't seen them all, but it seems like they're not grey. They don't say, like, oh, the evil guy, like, maybe he's right about this and maybe the good guy's wrong about this. It's just, like, that guy bad.
That's true. I think, you know, you want to look maybe towards, like, The Boys or Watchmen or something if you want, like, something critiquing superhero movies. You know, that's, like, a lot better, I think.
Yeah. The alternate example is, like, Breaking Bad, where the whole premise of the show was, like, how far can we take this main character before the audience starts kind of, like, having mixed feelings about him being the protagonist of the show. That was the whole premise, basically. And
yeah,
I like that.
Yeah, exactly.
It's kind of like, do you feel for this person? Because, like, he just killed someone. Like, he just, you know, and now he's killed another person. Like, oh, but he's saving his, you know, he's providing money for his family.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, and he's a dickhead. Like, he's a bad dude. But, like, yeah, you kind of have to deal with that problem of, like, oh, I liked a bad person. Or, like, is this justifiable? Like, where does it start and end? So, yeah, I'm with you. So what would you rate this?
It's tricky because of the format and, I guess, like, taking the context into account. It places it, it gives it a little handicap. I'm looking at the list and I would say it's somewhere towards the middle.
I can see that.
I would say it's above Logan's Run.
Oh, yeah.
And it's above Westworld for me, not by much. And it's above Soylent Green, perhaps. I got to give it a bit more time. But that's about it.
Yeah.
So it's lower middle.
I would put this, like, pretty much, like, smack dab in the middle.
Yeah. I like that.
I reckon I really liked it. I thought it was very interesting. Like, I thought the filming style was very interesting. It did verge on gimmicky at some points, but there's a necessary sort of kitschness, I think, that lots of science fiction has to inhabit when it's on the screen. Like, you either go full out into science or you go full into, like, you know, obsessional paranoia.
Yeah, so no, I think, yeah, kitschy is a good word for it, like that. It's like, it's got that kind of, like, lower budget, you know, foreign TV feel to it, but what would you rather, like, overdone strobe lighty Hollywood sci-fi? Like, no. So
yeah,
I can definitely give it a pass because there were some cool shots. The film grain kind of, I think it looks very similar to THX 1138. Kind of washed out, and a lot of whites and blues and just the intense like film grain.
And like I guess the thing with any film from the '70s is that you're gonna have to endure some pretty bad fashion. Like, yeah. All the pants were like bootcut flares.
The hair and the yeah. The intense makeup, like on all the women.
Yeah. I thought it was sick. I loved it.
Okay.
Are we gonna watch The 13th Floor, or what are we gonna do about that?
What do you want to do? I'm happy to do that, but if you get bored of this, we could like do it at a later date. Or
I'm happy to do it next. Like, I think that'd be good. I think just okay. Keep. I might think some more stuff about simulation or something. I don't know.
Yeah, well, we did it with Tarkovsky, and we made it through alive. You know, like we watched like two in a row, and that was good. Stalker was good.
I guess we get the sort of like American version of this story as well, to a certain degree.
True. Yeah. Or okay. Whoever, that will provide a good contrast. Okay. Sweet.
Yeah.
Tune in next all week right. for The 13th Floor, 1999.
All right, G.
All right, man.
This was good. Yep. I'm happy to be back.
Yeah, good to see you.